Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Last week's program was dedicated to music about cities. Guess what? So is this week's program. Given the abundance of selections to choose from and suggestions for other inclusions, today's program is part two of two. This intro music, for example, Dulieb's Coppelia honors Paris. As noted in ClassicFM.com, if marches and waltzes are inherently Viennese, and if mazurkas are intrinsically Polish, and if nocturnes are forever Irish at their core, then Paris is home of the world's greatest ballet music. It was here, in 1870, that Dulieb's world premiere of the ballet, Coppelia, was held. Musically, from the dainty waltz, which is playing in the background now, to the rousing mazurka, Coppelia is packed full of bright saccharine tunes. In that sense, it's sort of a French nutcracker, and a delightful one at that. Music Review is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the websites businessinsider.com and onthisday.com. Question number one. One of the more popular songs heard on Memorial Day and the 4th of July is Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA. What is the backstory to this song? Is it A, an American anti-American anthem about the Vietnam War? Is it B, it's about the costs and benefits of being born on a national holiday? Is it C, it's a tribute to patriotism and all wars fought by the United States? Or is it D, it is about the rise in illegal immigration? And question number two, it was on this day back in which year that the Beatles released Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band? On this day in which year? Was that 1960? Answer B, 1964, C, 1967, or D, 1969. Sergeant Pepper's, which year? The answers to these two important musical trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of May the 1st. Well, it was on this day back in 1857 that composer Sir Edward William Elgar was born. Elgar, an English composer whose work in the orchestral idiom of the late 19th century Romanticism stimulated a renaissance of English music, was known for such compositions as Pomp and Circumstance. And it was 54 years ago today, 1964, that Dolly Parton moved to Nashville, Tennessee, just one day after she graduated from high school, 1964.
I still hear your sea winds blowing.
And in country music news with a city connection, we have Glenn Campbell singing Galveston. As noted in songfacts.com, this 1969 hit, which made the CMT Top 10 list of all-time great country music songs, was written by Jimmy Webb, who also wrote Campbell's hits By the Time I Get to Phoenix and Wichita Lineman. Jimmy Webb in 2012 said, Glenn was very, very good at commercializing my songs. He could come up with great intros and great solos, great breaks, and he wrote perfect strings because he wrote very little. It was a minimalist approach, and it just left Glenn out there with the song and the guitar. I tended to write a little bit more as an arranger, and probably too much. Galveston, by the way, is a city on the coast of Texas that seems to attract lots of hurricanes. Webb was on a beach in Galveston when he wrote the song. Most songwriters never find themselves in places like Galveston or Wichita, but Webb found inspiration in the people he encountered in these places. A couple of other bits of trivia about this song. The Vietnam War was going on when Campbell released it. It became known as an anti-war song. The Hawaiian singer Don Ho was the first to record this song, releasing it in 1968. Ho recalled that when he appeared on Campbell's show, the Glenn Campbell Good Time Hour in 1969, he gave Campbell a copy of the single and told him, "I didn't have any luck with this, maybe you will." Little Richard, who speaks his mind and doesn't hand out praise lightly, said of this song, "When Glenn Campbell says one word, Galveston, it shakes me up. It takes me, man. That's the whole soul of it, right there."
From over the pole, flying in a big airliner, chicken flying everywhere around the plane. No, we couldn't feel much finer.
Arlo Guthrie's daughter, Sarah Lee Guthrie, provides the folk tribute to cities with this version of her father's Coming Into Los Angeles. As noted by Jeff Butcher in the LA Times, it was the most inspiring voyage of Arlo Guthrie's itinerant music career, but a lot of the details are a bit of a blur now, like so much of the late 60s. I was flying from London to L.A. It was around 1968. The one thing Guthrie absolutely remembers about it is the turbulence. It was one of those bumpy flights where the whole plane just drops and you feel like you're in a car that just bottomed out on the road. The ride was so rough that stewardesses were dropping chicken dinners off their trays. Passenger Guthrie had another reason for jangled nerves. His London friends had sent the young American home with some gifts, and after takeoff, he opened one and found some contraband inside that left them in a smuggler's sweat and later inspired a song. The son of Woody Guthrie was already a counterculture star thanks to the 1967 folk epic Alice's Restaurant Massacre, and he only added to his rep as a troubadour prodigy when he performed Coming Into Los Angeles at Woodstock in 1969. In 2003, Guthrie was at Boston's Logan International Airport when he felt the stares of two federal agents with dour expressions and plastic earpieces. Now, people like me, we have a chemical reaction to people like that. One of them walks over and says, "You Guthrie?" I said, "Yeah." And he looks at my bag and goes, "You got a couple of keys in there?" And then he just smiled and asked for an autograph. Huh. The times have changed, haven't they? The city of Kiev, Ukraine, is represented here by Movement No. 10 of Mussorgsky's 1874 Pictures at an Exhibition, The Great Gate of Kiev. As noted by Betsy Schwarm in Britannica.com, pictures at an exhibition, a musical work in 10 movements by Russian composer Modest Mussorgsky, was inspired by a visit to an art exhibition. Each of the movements represent one of the drawings, or the suite consists of musical depictions of 10 paintings by Hartman. Interspersed with a recurring promenade theme, or intermezzo, that represents a visitor, in this case the composer himself, strolling through the exhibition. The powerful nature of the intermezzi, Mussorgsky acknowledged in one of his letters, reflects his own large physique. The last two scenes of pictures at an exhibition are the most renowned. The hut on Fowl's legs is a nightmarish portrayal of the cackling witch Baba Yaga on the prowl for her prey. She charges, bounding in octaves, right into the 10th and final picture, The Great Gate of Kiev, with a depiction of Hartman's sketch of a proposed city gate, topped by cupolas in which bells ring. Mussorgsky brings the piece to a majestic close. The city of Miami receives jazzy attention here from Donald Fagan of Steely Dan. As noted in the immortaljukebox.com, Fagan states, "During the final mix down of the album, I started to feel kind of funny, and that feeling turned into an even weirder feeling that had to do with work and love and the past and mortality and so forth. I wouldn't complete another CD until 1993, so I'm glad I made this solo album, The Nightfly, before a lot of the kidness was beat the hell out of me, as happens to all of us." Fagan's triumph is the way the individual songs and the architecture of the album as a whole honor and celebrate the hopes and dreams of the youth he was, while allowing his older self to offer, without spite or scorn, insightful and sometimes painful illuminations of how easily those tender hopes and dreams could be wrecked upon the rocks. The shining carousel and giddy, glittering motion song, which provided me with the key to the album, is the song Walk Between the Raindrops. The song takes its cue from a rabbinical story where, miraculously, the rabbi stays dry in the rain by walking between the raindrops. It can't be done. Of course it can't. Yet that's exactly what Donald Fagan has done in The Nightfly. He's walked back to his youth and him the young man he was, with knowing affection, despite the rain of bitter knowledge manhood has inevitably brought on him. And to do that, he has indeed walked between the raindrops. I call that a miracle. And in music and research, we have city life is, by definition, a densely settled life. So what effect, if any, does music have on such living conditions? Well, this article by Belle Beth Cooper, published on the 6th of December 2013, titled The Surprising Science Behind What Music Does to Our Brains, in FastCompany.com, provides some possible insights. Friedrich begins this article with a quote by Friedrich Nietzsche. This is by Cooper writes this: "Without music, life would be a mistake." We all like to pump up the tunes when we're powering through our to-do list, right? But when it comes to creative work, loud music may not be the best option. It turns out that a moderate noise level is the sweet spot for creativity. Even more than low noise levels, ambient noise apparently gets our creative juices flowing and doesn't put us off the way high levels of noise do. The way this works is that moderate noise levels increase processing difficulty, which promotes abstract processing, leading to higher creativity. In other words, when we struggle, just enough, to process things as we normally would, we resort to more creative approaches. In high noise levels, however, our creative thinking is impaired because we're overwhelmed and struggle to process information efficiently. This is very similar to how temperature and lighting can affect our productivity, where paradoxically, a slightly more crowded place can be beneficial. Given that some personality types might be better suited to crowds, sound levels, and stimulation, how is music preference related to personality? Well, according to a study conducted at Heriot Watt University in Scotland, preferences for different music genres do show a connection to different personality characteristics. For just one example, blues, jazz, and soul music fans tended to be outgoing and have high levels of self-esteem and creativity, while classical music fans were found to also have high self-esteem and creativity, but tended to be more introverted. Another study done on teenagers and young adults focused on how their driving is affected by music, and cities certainly have a lot of drivers. Drivers were tested while listening to their own choice of music, silence, or safe music choices provided by the researchers. Of course, their own music was preferred, but it also proved to be the more distracting. Drivers made more mistakes and drove more aggressively when listening to their own choice of music. Even more surprising, music provided by the researchers proved to be more beneficial than no music at all. It seems that unfamiliar or uninteresting music is best for safe driving. Another study found that classical music can improve visual attention. The study also tried white noise and silence to compare the results and found that, like the driving study mentioned earlier, silence resulted in the worst scores. The conclusions need to be explored further for validation, but I find it really interesting how music and noise can affect our other senses and abilities, in this case vision. Another study focused on noise rather than music showed that when it comes to being distracted by the conversations of others, phone calls where we can only hear one side of the conversation are the worst offenders. After a survey showed that up to 82% of people find overhearing cell phone conversations annoying, Veronica Galvan, a cognitive psychologist at the University of San Diego, decided to study why these are such a pain. In the study, participants completed word puzzles while one half of them overheard one side of a mundane phone conversation in the background. The other half of the volunteers heard the entire conversation as it took place between two people in the room. Those who heard the one-sided phone conversation found it more distracting than those who heard both people talking. They also remembered more of the conversation, showing that it had grabbed their attention more than those who heard both sides and didn't remember as much of the discussion. The unpredictability of a one-sided conversation seems to be the cause of it grabbing our attention more. Hearing both sides of a conversation, on the other hand, gives us more context, which makes it easier to tune out the distraction. Then again, as we've explored before, getting distracted is often not such a bad thing. And some environments, cities, for example, may have more distractions.
From Rochdale to Ocherias, from Ocherias to Dorking, from Dorking it's back to Rochdale, from Rochdale to Ocherias. You spend half your life in transit.
The Caribbean receives attention in this song by the pop rock group 10cc from their album Bloody Tourists. As noted in PaceMagazine.com by 1978, 10cc's humorous musical toils were being penned and recorded mostly by the two lead vocalists and guitarists, Graham Gouldman and Eric Stewart, with the aid of session musicians. Gouldman had also written hits for bands like the Hollies, Jeff Beck, and the Yardbirds. As they explained in one of their concerts, Rochdale is the place in England where members of the band are from, while Ocho Rios is a port town in Jamaica where they would vacation. The pop songs from this album were written to provide insights into what it's like for a band to be on tour in Caribbean towns, hence the title of their album, Bloody Tourists.
Try to get a flight out to San Juan, but at Jamaica don't fly on Sunday. Gotta get a flight out to San Juan.
I don't drink coffee, I take tea, my dear. I like my toast now on one side. You can hear it in my accent when I talk. I'm an Englishman in New York.
Another rock and pop music connection to a city is this song, An Englishman in New York, by Sting of the Police. As noted in songfacts.com, Sting remembered feeling homesick when he first moved to New York and seeking out the English pubs in the city to get a taste of home. I go early on Saturday mornings to one of these pubs to watch live soccer from England via satellite. There you could drink English beer, enjoy a greasy fried breakfast, and rub shoulders with Englishmen from Manchester, Liverpool, London, and Newcastle. We'd yell at the screen as if our voices could have some magical influence over a poor offside decision by the ref, or to advise him that a foul had been committed when he was looking the other way. We are a superstitious and primitive tribe, and when the match was over, we'd fade back into the city like ghosts, he remembered. Sting wanted an eclectic mix of music to convey the varied sounds on a New York City street. He told Musician in 1987, "It started as a reggae kind of lilt, and then I added a bridge that felt classical, so I put the violins and harpsichords on. Then we went into a jazz section. I wanted to give the impression of somebody walking down the street, passing different musical events. To sum up what it's like on the street in New York, you pass a shop window and hear different kinds of music in each one." By the way, Sting performed this song at the Grammy Awards in 2018, this year. The version of An Englishman in New York that's playing in the background now is the Chamber Orchestra rendition from Sting's 2010 Symphonicities album. In songs set in cities by an artist with a local connection, we have Nina Simone performing her 1958 instrumental tune called Central Park Blues from her album Little Girl Blue. Central Park Blues features Simone on piano in her debut album released by Bethlehem Records. This North Carolina native was in her mid-20s at the time and still aspiring to be a classical concert pianist. She immediately sold the rights for the songs on this album to Bethlehem for $3,000, a deal that would eventually cost her royalty profits of more than $1 million. The original 1958 album was released in mono, but a second issue the following year by Bethlehem Records was stereo. The album was reissued by Bethlehem in 1992 on CD, with three additional tracks from the same session, including He's Got the Whole World in His Hands, and later remastered with the addition of My Baby Just Cares for Me, the extended version. Music. So how did you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, one of the more popular songs heard on Memorial Day and the 4th of July, is Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA. What is the backstory to this song? And the correct answer is, well, as noted by Frank Palota in the April 10, 2014 issue of Business Insider, a 4th of July favorite for many Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA is an anti-American ballad about Springsteen's anger towards the country's treatment of Vietnam vets. You think about all the young men and women that died in Vietnam and how many died since they've been back, Springsteen said. You have to think that at the time the country took advantage of their selflessness. The song has been misinterpreted by many, with Springsteen even telling President Reagan to stop using it as a patriotic anthem during the 1984 re-election campaign. However, its popularity, misunderstood or otherwise, has helped propel Born in the USA to become a multi-platinum album by selling over 15 million copies. And the answer to our second question, it was on this day, back in which year, that the Beatles released Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band? Correct answer. Answer C, 1967. As noted in songfacts.com, Paul McCartney wrote this and sang lead. After recording it, he had the idea of doing the whole album, as if Sgt. Pepper was a real band. It became the title track of what was considered a concept album, with the songs running seamlessly together on the record. The album was heavily produced and took 129 days and about 700 hours to complete. The Beatles' first album, Please Please Me, was recorded in less than 10 hours. On the cover of this album, McCartney is taller than the other Beatles. This added to rumors of his death, since there's also a hand above Paul's head, which is an omen of death. Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band was the first rock album to win a Grammy for Album of the Year. So let's end up today's program with a little help from our friends, the Beatles, from that 1967 album, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. And as we leave you, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Music Review is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast in the TRRS website, TriangleReadingService.org. Now, if you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me, Randy Thompson at 919-832-5138. So long. Until next time.
Sang out a tune, would you stand up and walk out on me?